Call this Committee on Regional Affairs meeting to order. This afternoon, we have in front of us a bill that's going to be presented by the bill sponsor. In today's committee meeting, we have Senator Wagner, Senator Stevens, and Senator Kukish here. And with that, we'll have Senator McGuire come on up and talk about Senate Bill 145.
Excuse me. You need to adopt the draft first. Do you have a CS in front of you? So you need to adopt.
Okay. In front of us, we have a CS for Senate Bill 145. We have a motion to go ahead and adopt the CS.
So move, Mr. Chairman.
Any objections?
Object, so we can discuss it.
Okay. Senator McGuire, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In speaking to the bill, I'll explain the CS, but let me just talk about the bill itself as a whole and then why we added what we did in the CS. So Senate Bill number 145 would ask municipalities to impound motor vehicles owned by a person who has more than $1,000 in unpaid traffic fines. Under current law, municipalities are authorized, this is current law, to adopt local ordinances for impoundment and forfeiture of vehicles for crimes including driving while intoxicated, driving with a suspended license, and driving without insurance. So as we speak today, municipalities across the state have laws that say that when you reach certain thresholds, you have your vehicle impounded, and then you've got to pay your fines in order to get it back and so forth. So Senate Bill number 145 would add accumulation of more than $1,000 in unpaid citations to the list. The municipality of Anchorage, and this is just, and it is the municipality of Anchorage, Mr. Chairman, that brought this to my attention. So in order to run the numbers in the various municipalities, if to the extent that members want me to, I could try to get that data. But just as an example, in the municipality of Anchorage, over $7.57 million are sitting out there in unpaid traffic fines. Currently, 1,017 individuals have those over 1,000 in unpaid fines. And I think that's important to note, Mr. Chairman, because it's the rare person that has it. It's not a common occurrence that a person would allow up to $1,000 in fines accumulate and simply just say, I'm not going to pay it. One person has 43 different citations totaling almost $10,000. Another has 70 traffic citations totaling $7,853. This law is meant to target the habitual repeat offenders who time and time again violate traffic laws, blatantly disregard public safety, and refuse to pay their citation fees. Many of these offenders refuse to pay their fines because they know that the municipality has no recourse. The Anchorage Assembly unanimously passed an ordinance on the same issue 2 weeks ago. Under the new ordinance, it would be a misdemeanor. So they actually made it a misdemeanor. We are not doing that. We are talking about impoundment and not making it a crime. For anyone who has at least three unpaid traffic tickets worth over $1,000 to drive in Anchorage. So they took a different approach. SB 145 allows the municipality to use forfeiture as a way to encourage compliance with the law, and it has no fiscal impact to the state. Individuals who are stopped by a police officer under these circumstances would lose their vehicle for a period of 30 days. In order for the individual to get the vehicle back, they would have to pay $390 in administrative fees plus towing and storage fees. And obviously, they would have to pay their traffic fines. If a person did not pay off their traffic tickets and are caught a second time, they could lose their vehicles permanently. The CS adds a new section in the bill that would allow the department to provide information on individuals' current employment history or records confidentially to a municipal attorney. That municipal attorney would be able to use to assist the municipality in finding the individuals and assisting in the collection of their civil or criminal fines, penalties, or other payment or judgments ordered by the court. Prior to the release of this information, the department and the municipal attorney would have to enter into a written agreement that governs the release of information. And most of you on the committee know I'm a privacy nut. And so this is really important to me. The written agreement must specify that the purpose of the information, a description of the information provided, a description of the procedure for transmitting, securing, using, and disposing of the information, and the method of reimbursement for the cost of providing that information. And so that's the new part of the CS. And I think there are folks online to testify that it has been increasingly difficult, Mr. Chairman, for municipalities to get these unpaid fines. And what happens is, frankly, they've tried the method of forfeiting or seizing someone's dividend. And what happens is it falls down the list in terms of priorities. You've got right now dividends are taken for a variety of purposes, but they are higher purposes, things like not paying child support. And so right now the municipality just feels like this is an overwhelming problem. Again, it's over $7.5 million of fines. They have no method by which to get to these folks that are the repeat offenders. And as I say again, it's the repeat offenders, the folks that reach that $1,000 and just simply thumb their nose at the government and say, I don't have to pay it, and I won't. So I submit that. That's the bill. The amendment would change it from may to shall. That I think will be brought up at another point. So you see the policy argument behind it. Our local assembly, which is very bipartisan, has passed this. And there's been a lot of really positive feedback from that the costs of running a municipality, frankly, are then passed on to the other folks in the community that do pay their fines and that do abide by the law. And they come in odd forms, but you could argue as a property taxpayer in a municipality that you are, as your mill rate goes up, as your property tax rate goes up, that you are in fact paying for those individuals who just sort of shrug their shoulders and say, I'm not gonna pay these fines. And so the rest of us are left to shoulder the responsibility. So this would be a method of getting their attention and asking these individuals to pay their fines. And the hope also, Mr. Chairman, in wrap-up, would be that it would be a deterrent, that for the individuals, there are studies out there, and when we were doing the DNA database law, for an example, there are studies that show that a general attitude toward disrespecting the law on a repeat basis tends to trend in other areas. There are trends. And what we'd like to do is get the attention of these individuals, and we're hoping that it would be a deterrent, that they would know that the next time they got a speeding ticket that they would have to pay that ticket, and that they would do so or risk having their car impounded for 30 days.
Do we have any questions of the bill sponsor, Senator Stevens?
So, through the chair, all this does is say this is another tool that the municipality can choose to use or not. We're not forcing them to adopt this. It's saying this is a number five, just a somebody else they can, if they choose to adopt it, they can.
That's exactly right. That section is a May section, if you will. That is a tool in the tool belt. The first part of the section number one, the reason that we would like to change it to shall is because if a municipality is going down that route where they want to garnish wages, where it's reached a significant point, we don't want to have a department employee say, we're not going to cooperate with you. So that's where that mandatory language comes in. In section two, this is just an option. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, if a municipality doesn't want to adopt an ordinance that would do that, they don't have to.
Any further questions of the bill sponsor?
Pretty, Mr. Chairman. Pretty
Senator Stevens, go ahead.
Amazing that someone has accumulated $9,300. I mean, that.
Yep.
I assume in the future that would not happen. Once it got to $1,000, it would probably.
I think it'll get their attention,
yeah.
You know, and I think the same idea behind DUI repeat offenders is there to say, we don't know what to do to get your attention. I mean, you keep driving drunk. I mean, what can we do? And so you want to make life as difficult as possible to get the attention of that individual. I'm learning this with my 13-month-old, by the way. How can I get your attention?
Senator Stevens, are you finished?
I'm finished.
Senator Wagner.
So the meter maid or the meter, what do you call a guy if he's a meter guy, I guess. But they're going out and they find a car that's parked illegally with an expired time on it. So will they be calling in then to check this list, or will they have this list with them? Or if they find a vehicle like this, then they find a violation, then they call the tow truck and impound at that time, right?
That's my understanding, Senator Wagner, through the chair, is that it will be if they're stopped by a police officer for yet another violation, this would kick in. Or if there were, as you said, I think that would be an unusual occurrence, but it could happen that a meter maid or somebody would find that. Generally, the expired tags are fix-it tickets. We have, in our municipality, a lot of fix-it tickets, a lot of kind of latitude for those things like your light's broken or your windshield wipers aren't operating. Those are fix-it tickets, and you have the opportunity to go fix it and bring it back and get that waived.
Any further questions, Senator Wagner?
No.
Actually, I've got a conceptual question. You've got a violator out there that's causing problems and owes money and whatever else. Why are you taking his vehicle when you should be taking action against him personally with with his driver's license? Why aren't you going after the driver's license instead of the vehicle?
Well,
which then goes on to the next question. And you can answer it in whatever order, whatever way you want to order it. But if a person is driving somebody else's vehicle, and the vehicle is registered to somebody that's not even related to him, or if he's driving a company vehicle, what do you do in that circumstance?
That's a very good question. Wendy, do you want to answer that?
Because then, Moore, who's
okay, okay, we'll Ann Moore will, because I know these have been debates. I would defer to her to answer those questions, because now, from my standpoint, I will give you my opinion, but I can tell you there's been debate over the last couple of years about how to get at these folks, and the decision was made that impounding the vehicle was the way to get their attention the most dramatically. You'd have to ask her with respect to driving a company vehicle. I don't know the answer to that. With taking a driver's license, the only thing I would say, and we dealt with this on DUI laws too, and I remember healthy debate over in the other body's judiciary committee, is that it tends to not get people's attention as well. People tend to not care. People who have this kind of a mentality where they have amassed 43 violations or 3 DUIs have a general disregard of the law. A driver's license is a government-issued document that allows you the privilege of driving on our roads. Mm-hmm. And so why would, if you just want to crawl into the mind of this individual, why would that individual suddenly decide that they're going to care what their government says about their privilege to drive on a roadway when they haven't cared enough to drive 3 different times drunk or have 43 citations issued against them? In other words, they don't care. We'll get in the car and drive. So the thought, from my perspective, is that the way that you reach people the best is through sometimes some of the more dramatic means.
Punitive action.
Okay.
But why don't you ask her, if you wouldn't mind, Mr. Chairman, for their perspective.
Is on the list.
Yeah.
Before we go on to our people that are going to be testifying, we've got a couple of amendments in front of us. The first one has to do with an amendment that deals with page 1. Can I go ahead and ask for a motion?
So move, Mr. Chair. Move Wait. Amendment number 1.
Is there objection to the amendment? And I'll object for the sponsor to go ahead and speak to the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I explained before, there is some concern that there might be reticence on the part of the Department of Labor to give that information that would be necessary. And again, the written agreement has to be entered into, but the concern that the municipality of Anchorage had was that they may choose not to. And if they did, then it sort of makes the law null and void. It has no meaning. They may do it, but if they don't do it, then what?
Under what circumstances would they be unwilling to do it?
I don't know. Maybe they, I can't speculate, Mr. Chairman, but I think if you want them to give that information, if the public policy that we want to adopt as a legislature is that we want that information to be shared under that agreement, confidentiality to be used in securing the payment of those fines, that we ought to say shall. If you don't agree with the policy, then you shouldn't have it in there.
Senator Stevens.
Yeah, just now, why are we going to the Department of Labor? I mean, I maybe you can explain that to me. The Department of Motor Vehicles would have what addresses, but not employers. And so your idea of going to the Department of Labor is to find out what?
Employment through the chair, Senator Stevens. This has to do with garnishing of wages. So currently, under Title 23, there are many stated reasons for which you could access a Department of Labor records. Some would be IRS, for example. The IRS can access those records for purposes of garnishing your wages. The Division of Health and Human Services for payment of child support can access and garnish those wages. And what the municipality is asking is for that same ability to go ahead and have the Department of Labor work with them to the extent they can. I mean, let's be honest, some individuals are self-employed. They work for cash. They may not be on the Department of Labor's radar screen, and maybe they don't want to be. So that wouldn't be a tool they could use. But to the extent that the municipality could use that tool, that information was there and they were able to get into and have that agreement, we'd really like them to provide that information. And so we think that it's stronger to say that they shall provide the information.
Any further questions related to the amendment? With that, I'll remove my objection to the amendment. Without objection, the amendment passes. Okay, we'll go on to the off-net sites for...
We
have a conceptual amendment, that's correct.
Yes, and you would have to offer it, I think, Mr. Chairman, but the concept would be, I personally like to include, there is a general severability clause contained in our statutes, but if you recall in dealing with our Stranded Gas Act last year and other bills that are really complex, I like to include a severability clause that would state, and it would be conceptual, that if any part of this bill is ruled unconstitutional, that the remainder of the bill still exists and can be enforced.
Any questions on the conceptual amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stevens.
There must be a reason why you think that some part may be ruled unconstitutional. What is that part?
Well, and this maybe, Wendy, do you think you could speak to? Okay. I've been given a couple examples, but.
We'll call Wendy Chamberlain.
Thank you, Senator. For the record, my name's Wendy Chamberlain, and I represent the municipality of Anchorage. The reason that Senator McGuire and we suggested maybe this would be a good idea, Department of Labor has expressed concern over providing any information due to confidentiality laws. And from the municipality's point of view, we already have the confidential information. We would be providing the name, the social security number, their address, their age. What we don't have for these people is we find that a lot of these offenders move jobs, and so they'll be 6 months at this job and 6 months at the next job, or 2 months or 3 months. What we don't have is the employer and their address. The reason we talked to the department and initially thought we had worked out where they could provide it for us, but then they did inform us that that would be something they'd like direction to do, just to cover themselves and also to so that they would provide it. So kind of from the municipality's point of view, why?
Okay. Any further questions of the Senator Kukish, actually?
I was just wondering what the constitutionality question would be there. I didn't hear it.
Well, our attorneys just said that there really wouldn't be one, but the Department of Labor thought, you know, well, we're giving you the employer and their address. We went back to the department and said, if you go to a doctor's office, you have to give an employer an address. If I have my phone or cable or anything, it always asks for your employer and your employer's address. You put it on most everything you fill out these days. But there was still that question there. So we thought, rather than lose the two different sections of the bill, both priorities with the municipality, it was probably wiser to put the severability in there, and just in case there was an issue. We don't see one, and the municipal attorneys don't see one, mm-hmm. but just to cover the bill.
Senator Kukish, any further questions?
No.
Senator Stevens.
So, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, then through the Chair, I guess what we're saying, Wendy, is that if the first section goes down because it's considered unconstitutional,
yes.
you still have the section that allows you to
impound a vehicle.
Impound someone's vehicle.
Yes. Right. I wanted to answer one question, too, and the police chief for Anchorage is online, and he was in town last week, and we did talk about this, but one of the problems we have, not their driver's license, and it was a question, I think, Senator Olson, that you did ask, numerous people here involved are driving. The records show that there's a tremendous correlation. The data's provided that from the Anchorage police where significantly high correlation between motor vehicle accidents caused by drivers with significant delinquent traffic fines. So they go on and there's traffic accidents. And it'd be nice to take away their license every time. A lot of time these drivers don't have licenses. It's already been taken away. Mm-hmm. So this gives us, you know, the scuff law, they still drive, of course, without a license. So we really, our hands are tied at that stage.
Any further questions, Senator Stevens?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Maybe a bill or a question for the bill sponsor. Just want to know, is there anybody from the Department of Labor online that we could ask the question of more specific?
I don't know that.
If not, we'll go ahead and go on.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
I think they'll work it out, but.
Sure. With that, we have conceptual amendment number 2, which is general severability, related to the general severability cause, which reads, if any part of this bill is ruled unconstitutional, the remainder of the bill will remain in force. Any objection to the conceptual amendment? If not, the amendment is passed. With that, we'll continue on with our public testimony. First online, we have on the off-net, Steve Smith, who's the deputy chief of the Anchorage Police Department. Mr. Smith, are you on?
Yes, sir, I am.
Go ahead with your testimony, please, after you state your name and who you're affiliated with.
Yes, thank you. My name is Stephen Smith. I'm the deputy chief of administration of the Anchorage Police Department. Speaking on Chief Hune's behalf, he had a priority conflict and regrets he couldn't testify. Mr. Chairman, I thank you for this opportunity to bring the police perspective to this testimony and speak in support of this bill. Public safety's basic mission is to change bad behavior in offenders, usually through enforcing the law and imposing sanctions or consequences on bad behavior. When those sanctions or consequences are not enforced or enforceable, typically it does not change bad behavior. And that's obviously the case as it pertains to this several traffic offenders that have, they're identified as having those inordinate number of delinquent traffic fines. As you've heard some of these numbers, a fairly small portion of our population that pretty much they do not recognize these sanctions or enforcement of a traffic ticket, and therefore they become delinquent. As was mentioned previously a couple of times, these offenders typically pose an ongoing danger to the public due to that continuing bad behavior, that attitude, if you will, anti-authority, anti-sanction attitude that exudes in their conduct, both in their conduct in driving, their traffic behavior, and other offenses, other criminal-type behavior as well. And so we feel that the provisions of this bill will give law enforcement an additional tool to change that behavior in repeat traffic offenders. As was noted, taking their licenses away does not seem to work because they don't really recognize that authority in the first place. So if they're going to break laws, they'll break them to include driving without a license. And as was mentioned, many of them don't have licenses already. So this gives us another tool to change their behavior. At the very least, get them on their feet instead of on the road should we encounter them in violation. And that concludes my testimony, and I stand open for questions.
Any questions of Mr. Smith? We have one question from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Senator. I just wanted to ask about the, we're dealing with a person who has no license and no insurance, and they've got a car. It's probably not a Mercedes. What happens if they don't show up, they don't pay the $39 fee, they don't get the car back, they don't pay their traffic tickets? What do you do with the vehicle?
Yes, thank you, Senator. And through the chair, the vehicle is subject, it's impounded. It is subject to forfeiture And that is a separate proceeding, of course. So the city can pursue forfeiture of impounded vehicles that are not wrested from impoundment through the procedures.
So you may get some of the fine money that you would expect back through selling the car. Is that true?
Yes. To the chair, we do try to recover some of our costs through those proceedings, especially if a vehicle has, you know, sat in impoundment for some time. Those impounds are done through a contract or a private contractor, so fees build up that would attach to the vehicle for the person to have to pay those fees. If we impound the vehicle or if we forfeit the vehicle, we can get some level of monies back out of those.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions, Mr. Smith? Mr. Smith, I've got a question. What happens if the vehicle is not registered into the violator's name?
Yes, well, through the chair, as you know, I'm reading the bill. It says that the motor vehicle, item 5, used by the person. So the bill as it stands does not require that the vehicle, that the person, I'll put the focus on the driver, being the registered owner. So the vehicle would be subject to impound no matter who owned it.
Really? So if some guy borrowed the preacher's wife's car that is out there, and it's the only one, the only reason he borrowed her car was because the preacher's wife didn't have a, it was broke down in the garage there, you'd still impound that car?
Yes, and I can see how that would seem, you know, a little draconian, or, you know, the circumstances might not seem fair to the preacher's wife. However, if you look at the people, these scofflaws, they have a support network. Of course, usually it's not the preacher's wife, but I appreciate the metaphor. They pass vehicles around, people in that subculture, that scofflaw subculture. This provision would make that person someone you wouldn't want to lend your car to. So it lowers, it narrows their options to be mobile. Because if I lend my car to you, you know, knowing that you've got all kinds of delinquent fines and such, I may lose my car just by, you know, taking an unwise risk on you and your behavior. It narrows their friend pool, I suppose, and access to different vehicles.
There's a bicycle club.
The other question that I have is that, you know, many of these people probably aren't businessmen, but it doesn't take a business person to figure it out. If I got $9,700 worth of traffic fines and I got a $400 jalopy out there, I'm going to let that car go. I'm not going to pay that fine.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable supposition that, you know, they would not be riding around in something, you know, unless it's stolen, something with tremendous value. So we won't recoup everything that they have outstanding. Again, we're focusing, in my perspective, the police perspective, on their behaviors. Some of my colleagues will be testifying from, you know, the Treasury standpoint and the monetary standpoint. From the police, the law enforcement perspective, we want to get them off the street. We want them, you know, not to be posing a hazard to the public.
Senator Wagner.
Let's talk about the other scenario where the person does have a valid driver's license. For one reason or the other, he's working for a corporation or company, say as a deliveryman. He's got a $17,000 van that he's making deliveries on. What's going to be the action of the municipality in that case?
Well, thank you, Senator. Through the chair, from the police perspective, we would just follow the law and impound the vehicle. Whether or not, you know, the city would pursue forfeiture, I'll defer to my colleagues in Treasury and such to speak to that issue. In that case, it sounds like the owner of the vehicle, you know, would be reputable and have the means by which to get that vehicle out of impound. You know, whether or not whatever personnel action they would take toward their, you know, delinquent driver is another matter.
Any further questions, Senator Wagner?
Well,
continuing on with that line of questioning on page 2 where he talks about on line 4, starting on line 4, section A, subsection 1, where you're talking about aircraft as well. Are you impounding aircraft that probably don't belong to the violator?
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, we in the Anchorage Police Department really don't get involved with a lot of aircraft. So I don't think I can speak very well to that. For the most part, even watercraft, for the most part, we don't get involved, even though I see the provisions there. For us, the vast majority of our work is with motor vehicles.
But my question has to do with, you would have the authority to go ahead and impound somebody's aircraft, even if it wasn't registered to the violator. Is that correct?
Well, looking at item one, as you identify, I'm not sure of what all those other provisions are under AS 28 series. Item five is specific to motor vehicles, so we wouldn't have the authority as it relates to watercraft and aircraft under the $1,000 delinquent traffic fine provision, as I understand it.
Does the bill sponsor want to study it and comment on it, or shall we go through the rest of the testimony and then get back to it?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to really quickly make it clear to the committee that...
Senator McGuire, if you just identify yourself, please.
Senator McGuire, for the record, that what we're doing in our bill is not impacting the current statute that applies to watercraft and aircraft. Those are... I can look them up real quick, and I'll give them to you later, but I think they're DUI and other charges. All we're doing here is talking about motor vehicles. So if you have $1,000 in unpaid fines related to an aircraft, that doesn't apply to the bill.
What if it were the preacher's wife's airplane? Would that?
Even if it's the preacher's wife.
Okay. Any further questions of Mr. Smith? Next, we have Dan Moore online. Mr. Moore, if you would, please.
Hello. Can you hear me?
You're coming in loud and clear. Identify yourself.
Okay, great. Thanks. My name is Daniel Moore. I'm the treasurer for the municipality of Anchorage. And thank you, Chairman Olson, for the opportunity to testify today on Senate Bill 145. Senator McGuire covered some very important points that I'll try not to repeat too much. I do want to clarify just right up front that the traffic cases and the criminal fine cases that we are pursuing in terms of a collection are all cases that have run through the Alaska court system. So they're considered judgment cases, which we are fully empowered by the court to go collect. And we actually have a formal agreement with the court system to act as their collection agent. So that's what we're charged with in terms of trying to pursue these. In terms of unpaid default judgment cases, we truly see it at a crisis point for local governments within Alaska and for the Alaska court system. And we do feel that we need to be empowered with the highest levels of enforcement and collection tools that are available to us. We strongly support the concept behind the major elements contained in Senate Bill 145, the committee substitute, which you're reviewing today. And we feel, as the police department has also testified, this will greatly enhance public safety and rightfully hold individuals accountable for the past violations of law, and also, going forward, encourage better compliance with the law, knowing that the consequences will start to catch up to them. And one thing I meant to say in the very beginning is I did provide written comments to the committee, and all I'm going to do is just highlight a few points from my written comments.
And we have the comments in front of us. You just summarize it for us, please.
Okay, in terms of the bill itself and the verbiage, in my written comments, we basically provided the committee with our original proposed language, which was very specific as to how we would like Department of Labor, and I'm speaking just to the wage garnishment piece, but how we'd like Department of Labor to comply with future requests by a municipal attorney for employer information. Our concern was that we have had, you know, a long dialogue over the last couple of years with Department of Labor, and we felt previously that we could exercise an existing part of the statute, but we have not been successful over the last couple of years getting Department of Labor to actually help us with that. So part of this, what's driving this legislation, is to make sure that there is a compelling language in the bill that will have Department of Labor sort of basically guarantee to work with us in the future. So we would accept the committee substitute language as it is, and we are very content with the fact that it's been changed from may to shall. So I wanted to clarify that because my written comments suggested just completely replacing the committee substitute language, which we don't need to go there now that the word has been changed from may to shall. In terms of other comments, just on the background here, the City of Anchorage has been pursuing these judgment cases very, very actively for the last several years. We've done all sorts of things to try to improve our collection realization, and we formed a task force that included the court system, Department of Motor Vehicles, Municipal Prosecutor, and APD, and the task force has worked closely for the last 2 years to talk about many different ways of trying to attack the problems that we see before us. In terms of the magnitude of the problem, Senator McGuire did quote accurately the figures, and those were for Anchorage alone. These figures would be much greater if you looked at it from a statewide basis. But the two main categories that we would pursue wage garnishment on are unpaid traffic citations, which previously were mentioned as almost $8 million owed. This affects 23,000 individuals that are out there. These are unique individuals. In the second category, besides traffic fines, are criminal fines, and this is where you get into domestic violence, DUI, cases like that. The criminal fines alone add up to over $16 million of unpaid fines, and they tie into over 16,000 unique individuals. So the magnitude of the problem that we're dealing with is very, very large, and despite all our efforts with PFD garnishment and other approaches, we just feel that, you know, we're not able to take a big enough bite out of this problem, and the problem literally is growing worse from one year to the next. Okay, just to add a couple more things, and then I'll conclude. Sure. In terms of our proposed solution for wage garnishment and the confidentiality aspects to it, we are only asking that the Department of Labor provide us employer name and address. And as Wendy pointed out, this is very common information that people offer frequently in their daily lives. So that with that information, with employer name and address, we would then follow the court process of garnishing wages in order to collect these judgment cases that have been given to us by the court. Our track record for protecting information is a long track record. We've worked with PFD records for over 14 years. We've never had any breach of confidentiality. And every year we receive from the Department of Revenue 600,000 name, address, date of birth, Social Security number. So there's already a working relationship between the municipality, the court, and the Department of Revenue to try to garnish, except the garnishment is just through PFD. Our proposal is to garnish through not only PFD, but also through wages. The wages we're talking about are from a private employer database that the Department of Labor maintains. It's updated quarterly, and so the information to us would be very timely. Just so the committee knows, we've already garnished our own wages. We've looked to the municipality of Anchorage and the Anchorage School District, and we've already submitted the paperwork necessary to garnish our own employees. So we figure that we would, you know, first address our own situation and then broaden out from there. Just to conclude, because I know I have a time limit here, just in conclusion, we feel that the legislation that's proposed here provides the greatest public good by holding debtors accountable for breaking public laws. This can only help to encourage greater compliance with the laws in the future and to improve public safety. In addition, in every dollar collected via wage garnishment by the municipality will go back to the Anchorage Police Department budget to fund police enforcement. In addition, money that we collect also partially reimburses the court system for their portion of court collection costs. So I'll stop there so I don't take up too much of the committee's time, but I definitely appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moore. Next, we have Josh. Or any question of Mr. Moore? Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Moore, I appreciate your comments. I apologize for not taking a while to figure this out, but if I understand it, what you're saying is that Section 2 of this bill, which has to do with impoundment or forfeiture of vehicles, you would utilize that for the unpaid traffic citations, $7 million, 23,000 people. But the larger share, the $16 million for unpaid criminal fines, you would attempt to find employers' name and address, get that from the Department of Labor for the collection of civil or criminal fines. So am I understanding that correctly? And that's 26,000 people you'd be attempting to get those funds from.
Our intent is that the wage garnishment process would apply to both traffic and criminal fine together. And we see sort of two, these are very much related issues because there's a lot of crossover between the scoff laws and then the people that owe criminal fines. But our intent is to pursue both traffic and criminal fines through wage garnishment. And we're obviously being Treasury, we're more focused on collecting the dollars. The second part of the bill is, I think, the biggest effect of that, which is deals with the impoundment, is to interrupt the very, what they call, high flyers that are out there and to get them off the road. And that is much more of a public safety objective that they're trying to fulfill. And we definitely support that because I think what was mentioned earlier is if a person is on that magic list where they owe $1,000 or more in fines, traffic fines, then until they pay that list down, they will continue to be subjected to impoundment, and multiple impoundments lead to worse consequences for them. So there is a tie-in and overlap, but really from Treasury's perspective, our focus for today's testimony is on wage garnishment, and it's on trying to collect the 20-some million dollars total that exists for both traffic and criminal fines.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. I appreciate that, and that's a staggering figure, $23 million. So if I'm reading Section 1 where it says assist the municipality in collection of civil or criminal fines, does that wording not cover not only the unpaid criminal fines but also the unpaid traffic citations?
It does cover traffic because traffic in the municipality of Anchorage are considered a civil violation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Moore. I appreciate your comments. The chairman has had to step out. Is there any further questions of Mr. Moore? Thank you, Mr. Moore. I appreciate your comments, and the chairman has returned. And we've just finished with Mr. Moore.
Actually, I do have a question for Mr. Moore. You get a comment on the issue that we brought up before about the trying to attach the driver's license as opposed to the vehicle, which in some circumstances it may be more valuable to the driver that's offending than the vehicle is worth.
Is your question about suspending their driver's license?
No, either that or revoking it, one of the two.
Or revoking? The task force that we formed here locally has discussed that at length, and we have literally researched like the top 300 violators, and what we found is that they are very commonly, as the deputy chief testified, ignoring the law and continuing to drive regardless of their status of their license. And so it may affect a few, but for the population of scofflaws that we're trying to address in the second part of the bill, it's really, the history of this has shown that they are not likely to be affected by that.
Okay, and the other question has to do with vehicles that are registered to someone other than the offender. I guess, as was pointed out, if you got a $17,000 van that's run or belongs to a company, has the business community weighed in on this? They may be losing their high-priced rolling stock.
Yeah, Josh Freeman, who's going to testify in just a moment, he is prepared to answer that.
Okay. Any further questions, Mr. Smith? If not, Josh Freeman is online. Mr. Freeman, if you would, please.
Joshua Freeman. I'm an assistant municipal attorney for the municipality of Anchorage. Thanks for this opportunity to testify. I'd just like to make, I believe that you may have my points. There are four brief points that I have. One is the assembly has made a finding that there is based on data provided by Anchorage Police Department and I believe Treasury, that there's a significantly high correlation between motor vehicle accidents caused by drivers with significant delinquent traffic fines. So I think the primary focus for at least the impound forfeiture portion of this proposed legislation, is the public safety element of this. We're trying to take away vehicles from people that are dangerous to the public safety. And I was watching the testimony on the night the assembly passed this ordinance regarding impounding for having more than 1,000 in fines, and one of the persons who, actually there was only one person testified, but she came and she was in a she was severely hurt in a traffic accident by a person who had way more than 1,000 in traffic fines. And I think she was one of the primary reasons why the assembly took this up, because they couldn't believe that this person was able to drive, and I believe that he still had a license. So that's the primary reason, at least, for the assembly and when they passed it. There are other provisions, I guess, that we could try to attempt to, under state law, We could try to get these people, or as far as collecting the fines, we could try to get go to court and get bench warrants or try to suspend their license or whatever. But as previously testified, it's we're not sure that suspending a person's license really effectively mitigates the problem. These people, I think it's when their vehicle's taken from them, even if it's not worth something, it still causes more of a problem than just telling them that they can't drive anymore. The third thing that I'd like to say is, actually the fourth thing I'd like to jump to is, there was, I don't know if you received this or not, but when we were reviewing the proposed legislation, we noticed that it would be necessary to make this a, or have the state authorize the municipality to make this a misdemeanor offense, because we want to, we can't just, I don't think that we can just take people's vehicles to collect fines. I think we can take people's vehicles for public safety purposes, and we want to show that this is a public safety issue, and that's why we're taking their vehicles. And part of the and the $1,000 fine limit is where we've determined that it becomes a public safety issue. That's all I have. Thank you.
Any questions of Mr. Freeman? I guess, Mr. Freeman, since you're the municipal attorney, is what are the chances of getting a copy or a list of these offenders?
This is Dan Moore. We, in emailing to Judy Osterman earlier today, I did actually include two Excel spreadsheets. One of them lists all the traffic violators, and the other lists all the criminal fine violators.
Okay. It's my understanding there's 600 pages worth of...
Right. Yeah, they're very long, so you might want to think twice about printing it, but it's there for the record.
Are they online?
We have a an online website where you can look up name by name. We could post the entire list online also.
Okay. What do you need it for?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's kind of irrelevant, really.
True.
Well, I want to make sure I'm not on it. I see my friend's name's on here already.
They just got a lot of them.
How do you spell Wagner again?
Different than any name on here.
Mr. Freeman, thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we have Mick Forlalali. You would come up, please.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Mick Fornelli, and I'd like to thank the committee for the opportunity to provide some very brief testimony in support of Senate Bill 145. Most of the information that has already been presented on behalf of Treasury by Mr. Moore is what I can speak to. I just want to reiterate the fact that, as he mentioned earlier, all of these issues come to us as a default judgment or as a judgment from the court. In our process, we want to utilize all of the available tools that are available to us under due process. We have utilized the writ of execution to file against the permanent fund dividend. We have utilized writs of execution to file against bank accounts. And we would like to utilize this writ of execution and this law and this change in the statute to basically allow us to go against wages. The difficulty in the wage situation is that to be effective, you need the name of the employer. And in this case, the Department of Labor has that information, which, if they make it available to us, would allow us the opportunity then to utilize that tool. In a banking account situation, you file against a series of names at a given financial institution. The permanent fund, again, a list of names against those who have filed for a permanent fund dividend. In the wages scenario, you do need the name of the employer. That information is available from them. That would provide us the opportunity to once again provide a consequence for these individuals who failed to comply with law. And again, I reiterate, these are people who have failed to comply with the law. We're not going against anyone who is law-abiding and pays their fines, pays their fees, and obeys the law. These are simply people who ignore it, who choose to function in the scofflaw capacity, and say the law is for everyone else, but not them. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Mr. Fornelli, could you just state your name and who you're affiliated with?
Yes, sir. My name is Mick Fornelli, and I'm with the Treasury at the Municipality of Anchorage.
Thank you very much. Any questions of Mr. Fornelli? If not, then we'll go on to Dwayne Bannock with the Division of Motor Vehicles, or the Department of Motor Vehicles. Mr. Bannock, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. I'm Dwayne Bannock with the DMV. I'm simply here to answer any questions that you possibly might have for us, sir.
Any questions of Mr. Bannock? Senator Stevens.
Hi, Dwayne. We've only heard from Anchorage folks, and that's important, and I know they have an enormous problem there. Is this, but from your statewide perspective, is this an issue that would be of assistance to other communities?
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, yes, we do. I do have reason to believe that the municipality of, or I should say the city of Fairbanks, is considering a similar ordinance. And quite frankly, the reason that the DMV will support this is, as been previously stated, this is this bill doesn't impound any cars, but rather this bill allows local governments by ordinance to do such a thing. And I believe the phrase tool in the toolbox is an incredibly appropriate phrase for this piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Bannock.
Any further questions, Mr. Bannock? Okay, the next person we have online is Ed Sneeden from Anchorage Department of Law. Sniffen, I'm sorry. Mr. Sniffen, please.
Ed Sniffen, I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Civil Division of the Department of Law, and as with Mr. Bannock, I'm here to answer questions, and I was primarily attending because I'd heard there might be some additional amendments that I could speak to, but those amendments have not been introduced yet. So, but I'm happy to answer any of the questions from the Department of Law's perspective if the committee has any.
Mr. Sniffen, you're going to have to speak a little louder. Say that one more time.
He's only here to answer questions.
Oh, he's only here.
I'm sorry, Chairman. Can you hear me now?
Now you're coming in loud and clear. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Again, my name is Ed Sniffen. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law here in Anchorage. And I'm here primarily to answer questions. I was expecting an amendment that has not been introduced at this time that I was going to speak to. But while I'm here, I'm also happy to answer any of the questions the committee might have.
Actually, I do have a question for you. There was a question of severability, had it having to do with severability and the question of of constitutionality. Do you have any comment on that related to this bill?
Yes, through the chair, the constitutional questions that arise in this legislation deal with privacy issues under Section 1, and that is whether or not the disclosure of the information by the Department of Labor might infringe on privacy interests that individuals have in maintaining that information confidential. I think the representative from the municipality, though, was very accurate in stating that they have most of the confidential information on these offenders, and so the Department of Labor would not be giving that information up. But there is a potential argument that the employer identification information could fall under a constitutional right to privacy interest. I agree that I don't think it's much of an argument. This doesn't look like there is a violation there, but that's potentially one that could be in place. The other one that I see looking at Section 2 here is, and I think Mr. Freeman from the Municipal Attorney's Office hit it right on the head, and that is it's questionable whether or not you can take someone's vehicle for failure to pay fines if it's a financial issue alone. I think there's been sufficient testimony to tie this, though, to the safety issue that would probably pass constitutional muster. So that would be the other, though, issue that could possibly rise here. And I haven't studied this, to be honest with you, but just in my quick take at this, I don't see that either of those constitutional issues raise any problems.
Mr. Sniffen, thank you very much for your testimony. Any further questions of Mr. Sniffen? If not, we'll come back here to the sponsor, and before she sums it up, we've got an objection that's still on the table by Senator Wagner.
I'll remove my objection.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. And that completes the adoption of the CS. If you want to just go ahead and sum up the bill and what are the further comments you want to say, Senator McGuire?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. First, before I sum up, I wanted to respond to your question regarding aircrafts and what statutes that referenced in the current law, not our bill, but the current law. And that references operating a vehicle, aircraft, or watercraft while under the influence of alcohol, an alcoholic beverage, inhalant, or controlled substance. And then the other part is refusing to take a breathalyzer. So those are our DUI, if you will, statutes for aircraft. But we're not impacting them with the bill. So just in summary, if you agree to pass this bill out of committee today, you will be giving the option to municipalities across the state of Alaska to adopt ordinances, to impound vehicles, put a real strong tool in their tool belt for those individuals who continue to thumb their nose at, scoff, shrug their shoulders, however you want to say, at the laws of those municipalities to a level that reaches above $1,000 and above. And again, as I said, we are not making it state law. We're allowing municipalities to decide if they want to do it or not. And then in the first part of the bill, we are asking the Department of Law to please cooperate with municipalities and share that information in a confidential way so that they can recover those fines. Again, we all know that a lot of these municipalities are in trouble financially, and frankly, the rest of us who pay our fines and pay our bills are absorbing the cost of these other citizens of our communities that simply don't want to pay, and it's adding up in the millions now. So this is a real strong local bill that helps municipalities. And the issue about it being a misdemeanor and so forth, we can talk about in judiciary. I don't really like it, but we could talk about it there.
Any more questions of the bill sponsor? The last question I have is just the $7.5 million of non-paying citations. Is that just in citations alone, or does that include the interest that they've been accumulating?
Boy, that's a good question. Fiscal guy is
Dan Moore.
Dan Moore.
Mr. Moore, are you still on, please?
Great question.
This is Dan Moore. That only includes the fine amount plus the collection costs that are awarded by the court. There is no interest accumulated.
Which is $390 per incident?
I couldn't hear that.
Which was the administrative cost of $390 per incident?
That's on the impound program is what that was referring to.
Okay. Any further questions of the bill sponsor or anybody else that was online? If not, what's the will of the committee? Senator Stevens.
Mr. Chairman, I move we move out CS Senate Bill number 145 with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
There's a motion on the table to move the bill out. Any objection to it? If not, the bill passes from committee. Senator McGuire, thank you very much for your
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
We offline?
We should be offline.
Yeah. No, you have to adjourn.
Oh, I'm sorry. We're adjourned.